So you decide to give up on politics. You probably could have had a bright future in politics. Didn't you feel like you would want to run for governor?
I'll tell you what happened. Senator Baldwin and his secretary played gin rummy a lot in his office, and the door was closed. I didn't have a car up there because we had one good car, and my wife needed it here, and I had two little boys. So I rode back and forth to the Capitol with him or with anybody else that's going back to town. I never had to catch a cab, I say it that way. And so I'm outside, and down the hallways of the Capitol, you see a picture of all the old senators. And I was chief page of the Senate in 1953. I was working on ice docks, and I was filling up Senator Cartwright's jug every morning before we went and campaigned. And he knew how much I enjoyed politics, and so he asked me to go be chief page of the Senate, and I did. It was a great experience, great experience. So I was looking at these pictures, and Senator Baldwin came out, and I asked him about everybody on that picture. And future of a state senator is not that great. You get spoiled in the legislature. It's hard to ever come off of that.
Spoiled.
Meals, drinks, entertainment.
Catered to.
People looking up to you. People ask you to do this, do this. And then all of a sudden it's gone. I was 34 years old. I had the votes to be pro tem 2 years hence. And Bonnie Smith and I had agreed that he'd keep it 2 more years and then I would take it for 4 years. You think about it, I'd be 40 years old. But the way the terms worked, I'd be 42. Now, to start at 42 is bad. At 34, if you make some mistakes, you'll be forgiven. But you're getting 42 and you're getting in a different age bracket. So I just decided I wasn't going to do it. Didn't tell a living soul. I went down and called Bob Peterson and said, we need to talk. I said, I will not seek re-election. He got Dr. Hibbs and told him, and they had several hundred people out there trying to talk me out of quitting. And I said, I made up my mind. It was hard, believe me. It was hard. I loved the Senate. It was hard, but it was the smartest thing I ever did.
Something had to be calling you, though, to cause you to leave the legislature. Was there a calling? Was there a business?
I knew I wanted to be a businessman.
Right.
I came home, and we bought the Holiday Inn.
You came home and bought the Holiday Inn.
Let me back up. I already owned several apartment houses. The first two apartment houses that we owned, Sooner and Savage Apartments, the guys that built it got in trouble and couldn't pay the deal. A mortgage banker was on the note. They gave us those two apartments. All we had to do was pay for them. So we went out there and did all the work ourselves. And there was a 62-unit and 24-unit. Then I built two more with that, two 40 units. I built both of them while I was in the Senate. Got them all paid for, and then built another 100-and-something units down the Wood Manor. I gave them to my son, and he sold them back a few years ago.
Let's go back to this beginning again of the first apartment building.
Didn't have a penny.
Didn't have a penny.
In it, no. Didn't have a penny in it. They gave it to us to try to get their names off the note. I made Glenn Justice, who's a mortgage banker, stay on it. So we got the apartments full, got making money.
But you had to pay the bank.
Oh, yeah, we paid the bank.
Based on what revenue that was coming in?
Right.
For the rental of the units?
The rental of units. We ran apartments for like $100, $150 and get $400 for them now. But it paid its way.
That's the very beginning then.
Well, I made good money with Daily Oklahoman.
Tell us that story.
I had a local distributorship, and it paid $100, $125, $150 a week. But I sold the living textbook program to practically every school in southeast Oklahoma. I was in the office one day of Helge Helms, who's the circulation director, and I said, what is this? And he told me about it. He said, we hired a guy from OBU and one from Oklahoma City to sort of spearhead this for us. I said, this is a good program. Could I sell them? He said, you can't sell those. I said, I've got a degree in education. I said, yes, I can sell them. And he says, I'll sell them to you for a penny apiece. I got 4 cents for them. I said, okay. And I sold them. Well, I had probably 1,000, 2,000 a day going out. I sold more in southeast Oklahoma than they sold in the state of Oklahoma.
This is the living textbook?
Living textbook. That's using a newspaper as a textbook. And you take 15 minutes of your class period time, a history teacher, and talk about the news, because that is what's going to be history tomorrow. I would show it, and then I got the head of the history department at Southeastern to buy into the program. He loved it. He said, this is history tomorrow. And then the second thing he told me, he said, John, another thing you can do this program, a lot of athletes don't like school. And he said, you might teach them to read just to give them the sports page, and you'll improve their reading ability. So I sold it to every school in Southeast Oklahoma. It's a big deal.
That was big revenue for you.
Oh, yeah. 3 cents a copy.
3 cents a copy.
For each newspaper, I was paying a penny for it, and I was charging 4 cents. I was getting 3 cents, and they was hauling the papers there. I didn't have to worry about that.
The teachers then would take the newspaper and then teach from it every 15 minutes of every class. That's where you got your money.
That really got me rolling. It was a lot more than living, and I never did spend much money. Nobody ever taught me how to spend. They taught me how to make it. They never teach me how to spend it.
Did you ever learn how to spend?
No, I don't spend any money.
All right, so then you were accumulating money, so when this opportunity for the apartment buildings came along, you were ready for that.
Yes, it was an opportunity. We took those over and built up quite a few apartments, and we had some in Oklahoma City. And then we got out of Oklahoma City in the 70s or early 80s. These here I kept for, well, my son sold them, I guess, 10 years ago. I don't know.
So you're a natural businessman. You're obviously a salesman to go along with that business mind. And you're a public speaker. So you have all these gifts.
The greatest gift I've got is I love my fellow man. And I understand my fellow man. That is the greatest gift my mother could ever give me. It's to love people. Because people are good.
Well, some of them aren't, but...
Some of them aren't. Sometimes we have to think what they had gone through. And, you know, Mama taught me to never be around anybody hot-headed. Because you never win. They'll always get you in trouble and embarrass you. And people that are negative, you get as far as you can because you can try to change them, but in the end, you can't.
Today, we're sitting in your bank. How did you get into the banking business?
In 1965, Roy Hooton, who was president of the Durant Bank Trust, he and I and Don Carpenter and Joe Clay was going to go eat Mexican food one Thursday night. And he was telling me that Bill Kerr was going to buy the Durant Bank and Trust.
Is Bill Kerr related to?
Senator Kerr, his son.
Okay.
And I said, well, I know Bill Kerr very well. And I said, why don't we go back by my office and I'll call him. We go back by the office and call Bill Kerr, and I couldn't find him. And I had his number in Minnesota, and I had his number in Oklahoma City, and I couldn't find him. So Jack Kahn, who was Senator Kerr's law partner and chairman of Fidelity Bank, I called him, and he says, can you get a contract? And I said, the president of the bank is here with me, and he says we can. He says, meet me here at 6:30 in the morning at the Whitehall Club. That's on top of the Fidelity Bank. I get up at 2 o'clock and drive to Oklahoma City, and Roy Hooton goes with me. On the way up there, Roy said, John, I get nervous around these big shots, so you're going to have to do the talking. And I said, I don't know that much about banking except what I learned in college. We get up there. Jack Kahn listened to us for a while, and he said, Mr. Hooton, would you excuse John and I? We're friends. We got to talk in a few minutes. He goes out, and Jack said, how much money you got? And I said, I've got about $5,000 in my bond account that I can get out. And I said, there's probably $1,000 in my savings account. He says, John, back several months ago, I loaned you $400 to buy some stock. I said, I've still got it, the note's due next week, and I was going to talk to you about that after this meeting, get you to let me pay part of it and renew it and pay the interest. He said, John, you're going to sell that stock today. He called downstairs and got my stock certificate brought to me, and I went to Jack Hewitt, who's Lou Hewitt's son, who my mentor here in Durant. His son is a Republican and a good man. I said, Jack, I got to sell this stock. And I bought it because Jack Kahn told me to buy $400 worth of it and loan me the money. And it was worth $16,000.
Wow.
I got the money, and that next month, that company went under. And that was the $16,000 and the $5,000 I got into this bank with. And I was elected chairman, I guess, in 75. Then started buying it up. There were 14 of us. When somebody'd sell, the rest of us would pick it up, and it come down to just me the last 10 years because my board members were older. I owned 22%. One board member had to get out. So I negotiated the price to his, and we had a buy and sell agreement, but it wasn't applicable in the 80s. So I negotiated a purchase from one board member, gave me 44%. So I went to the board and I said, now I can't buy this 44% and have to sell the bank tomorrow if I can't buy your stock. So we got to do away with the buy and sell agreement. If that's what you want to do, or if you want to sell the bank, we'll sell it now. You know, whatever you want to do. Anyway, we changed our agreement. Mr. Spence, who owned the sale barn here in one bottom, he's really a good man, big cattleman. He sold me 7% of his stock to give me controlling interest, but I'd have to buy the rest of his stock at book value. And I said, it's fine. He sold me the 7%, and then about 2 years later, he walked in here one day, and he said, John, you made me $300,000 last year. I'm not worth that to you. I want you to buy my stock. And I said, we got a deal. I don't mind. I'll do anything you want to do. He said, I want you to take it and pay me out over 40 years. And I said, 40 years, I won't be alive. He said, Greg will.
Your son.
Yeah. I waited a few days and, you know, something like that. You would give a man time to think. I knew I would, but I wanted him to be rest assured he was right. He still was. I said, I'm going to change that to 15 years. And I did. He was a wonderful man, a wonderful man. And then I had Mr. Rustin, who stayed. He was an outstanding man. He had a cement company here. His boys run it now. And then I had Mr. Davis, who was a good man. He worked in the bank 50 years, and he didn't own as much as the rest of us. But I bought his stock.
And that was Durant Bank and Trust.
Right.
And then you changed the name.
Yes, and then I bought another one with a group of us, the bank at Holdenville. I ended up with 35-40% of that. Then I finally bought up into the 60s, and I merged the two banks together to become First United.
First United Bank. And now, isn't it one of the largest privately held banks in the United States?
Yes.
Privately held. How many branches do you have now?
30. I think there's 30 facilities.
Mostly in this vicinity of Durant?
No, we go from Sepulpa to Durant, Oklahoma City. We got 3 in there. Then I got several in Texas. I got 5 in Denton County, 1 in McKinney, and 1 in Craig Ranch.
You really weren't looking for a bank when that opportunity came to you. Have you thought about the banking business?
I bought 20 shares of stock in 1962-3, somewhere along in there. I think for $1,100. I had an interest, and I think what interested me, Clark Bass owned this bank before the 14 of us. Well, he sold it to Glenn Justice, and Glenn Justice sold it to us. You know, he talked to me about being a banker. I was running against his brother-in-law for the State House, and I thought that might have had something to do with it, but it didn't. It had nothing to do with it. But it is always in the back of my mind.
Okay, so it was there. That seed was there. And then when Jack Kahn comes along, bingo, all the pieces begin to fall into place.
He taught me how to buy a bank. Jack Kahn was an awful good man. He spent a lot of time with me, sat and talked to me, you know, and never did talk to him about any major problems. I always had a pretty good staff. I've got William Farrendorf here that came to work here and is 18 years old. He's 58 or 59 today, and I've been with me all these years. I'm going to tell you how he got hired. I was Clem Max Baden's campaign manager. I had to have somebody put up signs, and he is the best that I ever saw putting up signs.
For Clem Max Baden?
Yeah.
Tell us who he was.
Clem Max Baden was a state senator, president of the Senate, United States congressman. Didn't enjoy Congress. He only stayed there 2 years. He was a rodeo announcer, world-renowned, and probably one of the nicest guys in the world. And I was involved in his campaign for governor. He ran against David Bourne, and we got swept out as old guard. But he was an awful good man. I got William put up signs for him, and so I had to have a payroll and got a president of the bank to hire him down here, and he's been here ever since. He's the chief administrative officer here today. And then I had Gary Forbus, who was my head lender. He's semi-retired now. He's 60 years old, and as smart a man as you'll find, he still is on our board and committees and still participates.